Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. We'll get to our scheduled topic for the day, data centers, in a moment. But first, we awoke this morning to the news that longtime Charlotte Mayor Vi Lyles will resign effective June 30th, just months after winning re-election. And here to fill us in is WFAE politics reporter Steve Harrison. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Mike.
I guess the biggest question and the most obvious one is why?
Yeah, the mayor, the news release that came from the mayor didn't really give a reason. But the backstory here is that, you know, it's a very sensitive topic, but it kind of revolves around the mayor's health and her ability to do the job. The mayor is 73. She is the second longest serving mayor in the city's history after Pat McCrory. And over in recent months, years, the mayor has taken a step back in terms of the amount of time, you know, for instance, zoning meetings happen once a month in the city of Charlotte. The mayor has not attended one in months. She speaks less in public. When she does speak, it's sometimes not as clear. There are good days, there are bad days. And so this has been something that I think behind the scenes in the city, there's been a realization for a while that the mayor probably would not make it to December 2027.
I'm curious because you wrote an article yesterday in advance of this announcement that talked about all of the things that you just said and the speculation that she might not finish her term. And in fact, she had been asked that question and she said she would decide at a future time. And all of that came as a surprise to me. I mean, she used to make regular monthly visits to this program and stopped doing them several months ago, maybe 6-7 months ago. And we kind of wondered why. Maybe this is part of that. But why hasn't this been more widely reported on? If council members knew, if reporters knew, why are we just hearing about this on the morning of her resignation?
Yeah, I think that's a good question, Mike. I think that, you know, like I said earlier, it's a sensitive topic. It's a difficult topic that it's hard for people to talk about. And, you know, I had started as a reporter covering the city, started increasingly getting calls from just people in the community about the mayor. And people would ask, is she going to finish her term? And when I started getting enough of those calls, I started doing some reporting, and I spoke to her Monday before the council meeting and asked that question. I was like, look, this is a really hard thing to ask, but are you planning to finish your term? And then she was really very protected, didn't, you know, kind of give a very vague answer. And then the police kind of escorted her away. So I also think back in the fall when we had this election, the big thing on the ballot was the transit tax. That took up a lot of time. And the mayor has also never really faced any competition in terms of during an election where it would become an issue and someone would talk about it. So it's just something that has slowly kind of crept in and happened. And then now we found ourselves in kind of a surprise moment.
Have you noticed in your conversations with her or in your observations of her going about the business of government any change in her demeanor, her behavior, her ability to answer questions? Have you noticed that?
Yeah, absolutely. The mayor, during council meetings, can struggle sometimes to follow what's happening, sometimes needs some assistance. Now, to be fair, council meetings can devolve into like craziness with not motions and counter motions. It can be very difficult. But, you know, the mayor can attend events and be on script and nail it and really do a great job. But there are other times when it goes off script and that she does struggle to kind of articulate a clear vision of what's going on. This happened recently this year, the Center City Vision Awards uptown was one where I heard a lot of people I got a lot of calls about the mayor and her performance then. But Mike, I'll just back up for a minute and just say, we're talking about this. There are a few people in the city who have given as much to Charlotte as Vi Lyles. She's been mayor. This is her fifth term. She worked for the city basically her entire career in the budget office and then became assistant city manager. Like, basically her whole life has been in public service to this city.
Obviously, we've been talking about the speculation of whether she would continue in this term or not, and suddenly she's made that decision. Was there a moment, an event, an occurrence, do we know, that she decided, okay, now it's the time?
I understand is that there had been kind of a plan in the works for several weeks, perhaps months, to come up with some sort of transition plan. That's what I've heard. But then voices in the community, I think, started growing a little louder. Perhaps that sped it up. And then I spoke to her about it on Monday and told the city we were going to kind of write a story about this on Wednesday. And I think that was part of why we're talking about this week. But I think regardless, we were going to be talking about this at some point this year.
So this is not the first time that a Charlotte mayor has left office prior to the expiration of their term. It happened with Mr. Cannon. It happened with Mr. Fox. What happens next? How does this work?
Yeah, so city council has to come together and vote on an interim mayor. And you're going to need to get to 6 votes for that person. I think it's probably going to be someone who is not currently serving, because there's going to be an election in 2027, and everyone kind of assumed it was going to be an open race already. So I don't think anyone who is possibly going to run is going to get 6 votes. So you hear names thrown out like Malcolm Coley, Keith Cockrell. I think it will probably be someone from the outside. I don't know. I mean, that happened before, after Patrick Cannon resigned, the council brought in State Senator Dan Clodfelter. So there's precedent there.
And it has to be a Democrat by state law. Is that correct?
That's right.
Any thoughts? I know this is early and we have a lot of time to reflect on this, but as you point out, she's the second longest serving mayor in Charlotte history. What do you think she will be most remembered for?
I think there's kind of like 3 parts of her legacy. I think we talked about this transportation tax earlier that she spent years working on to get across the finish line. I mean, really a long time, probably going back before, I mean, really probably since the start of her tenure in 2018, that city has been working to get this over the finish line. And she finally did it in November 2025. I think she has made a huge commitment toward more money for affordable housing. That's something that is just very important to her on a personal level. And then she started post-pandemic, the Mayor's Racial Equity Initiative, that $250 million public-private partnership. I think those are kind of the 3 big pieces of the stool, so to speak.
Steve Harrison is WFAE's political reporter, updating us on news that broke earlier this morning that Mayor Vi Lyles, Charlotte's second longest serving mayor, has decided to resign and will step down at the end of June. Thanks, Steve, for your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike.
Data centers is our topic today. They've become a major topic of conversation among neighbors, planners, and politicians. They seem innocuous enough. They're usually nondescript, if large, buildings, housing, servers, and networking equipment. They are the computers that run applications, store data, and serve as the backbone of modern commerce and communications. They're supposed to operate invisibly in the background. So why have they become controversial? Here's how Antoinette Mingo expressed her feelings about a data center proposed for her neighborhood when she spoke with WBTV.
Demand for electricity, which they require a lot of, that's going to cause me to pay a lot more for utilities to include water. And when I think about the drought situation we're in now, what would have happened if we had that monstrosity online right now?
Governor Josh Stein has questioned tax breaks for data centers, and Charlotte City Council's Dimple Ejmera has called for a temporary pause on any new projects near residential areas and is asking for public hearings. While City Council's Dante Anderson says she and many other members need more information prior to any public hearings.
As an entire council, we have not had one full, robust conversation around data centers. But if the council doesn't have a baseline of knowledge, then it's not making best use of that public forum. So better to have the council caucus get caught up, and then we can have a public forum.
So these places are popping up everywhere, with more on the way, and the Charlotte region is apparently a very attractive location for them. We're going to find out why, talk about their environmental impact, their thirst for water and for power, and what that may mean for your electricity bill and more. We're joined by Charlotte City Council at-large member Dimple Ajmera. She is here with Nikki Menez, senior attorney for the Southern Environmental Law Center. And in full disclosure, the Southern Environmental Law Center is an underwriter of WFAE, and Zachary Turner is here. He is WFAE's climate reporter. Good morning to you all.
Morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Dimple, I have to start with an obvious question. Are you going to put your name in the hat to be the next mayor of Charlotte?
I wasn't expecting this question, Mike.
Oh, yes, you were.
No, I wasn't. I thought you were going to just talk about data centers. I know that there have been conversation about the future leadership of our city, but today is really about acknowledging the mayor and her service to our communities. Public service, Mike, at this level requires tremendous sacrifice, not just from the person who is serving, but also from their families. I want to thank the mayor and her family for their years of service to our communities.
All right. Nick Jimenez, senior attorney with the Southern Environmental Law Center, I'm starting with you. You were here last year to talk about this very topic. But for some people, this is just hitting their consciousness, and they don't know what data centers are, what they do, or why there's controversy around them. So tell us what they are. Did I adequately describe them? What do they do? Why we need them, and why they are suddenly proliferating?
So a data center, I think you described it very well. Data center is essentially a warehouse full of computer servers. And those servers are doing a lot of the work that supports our day-to-day use of the internet and services like, AI chatbots, but also a lot of the kind of normal cloud services like hosting pictures online or streaming Netflix.
So these are now a fact of life. We need these, and we have to be in the running with them because they have to be everywhere all over the world. Am I right about that?
I think they've been a fact of life for a while. It's just been under the radar. And the big difference that I've seen is the change from cloud data centers, where they're just essentially hosting a lot of data that gets pulled off a hard drive when you need it, to the late boom that is really driven by artificial intelligence. And the kind of training and then inference that those models require.
And we're going to spend a lot of time talking this hour about the drawbacks of having these data centers located in certain areas and the concerns that people have about them. But talk to me for a minute about whatever concerns there may be when we put up roadblocks to them, and which should be the greater concern, stopping them or letting them in? I'm going to start with Nick, and I know Dimple wants to talk about this too. Nick, go ahead.
So I think it's a bit of a balance. There are a lot of potential benefits that can come with data centers. Foremost, in most people's minds, probably property taxes, because they can be worth a whole lot. And if you have one, you can benefit from those property taxes, aside from the general societal use that we just talked about. So they're seen as an economic driver in that sense. And I think many of the folks working on this at the policy level don't want to prevent them from coming to the state entirely. I think SELC's position and a lot of community members is that we want communities to make informed decisions when they're deciding to let a data center in or not. And I think we need to make those decisions at a state level too. What sort of incentives are worth it?
I know that Dimple Ajmera, member of council, wants to talk about that very question. We'll get to it after the break because we're coming up to one and you cannot possibly answer it in 10 seconds. So I'll cut you a break here. We're talking about data centers, why they should or should not be located here, the concerns surrounding them and more. And we'll continue with that in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and the British International School of Charlotte. As part of the middle school Think Lab curriculum, students engage in hands-on, project-based learning focused on real-world problems. Information at bischarlotte.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about data centers this morning with Zach Turner, our climate reporter for WFAE News, Nick Jimenez, senior attorney with the Southern Environmental Law Center, and Dimple Ejmera, at-large member of Charlotte City Council. And Dimple, I know you wanted to chime in on the question I just asked Nick, and that is, which is the more important, putting up roadblocks, and which is the more the detrimental, putting up roadblocks or allowing these centers in?
So, Mike, this is not about being anti-growth or anti-business or anti-AI. This is about protecting our communities, protecting our families, and protecting neighborhoods, and making sure that our city grows responsibly. So I call for a 90-day pause so Charlotte can put some guardrails in place, because currently it's wild, wild west, because we need to ensure that these facilities operate within certain guardrails. Right now, Mike, data centers can go by right in 9 zoning districts, including mixed-use areas and even uptown core, which means when they go by right, they do not need community input, they do not need council approval, and that should concern everyone, because this is not about anti-growth, this is about growth being responsible. And we need to make sure that we are growing responsibly. We are not just growing at any cost.
And so you and other members of council have asked for public hearings on this before major decisions are made. But last week at council, Charlotte Mayor Vi Lyles cast the deciding tie-breaking vote not to hold those hearings for now. Do you understand why?
I do not. Because currently data centers can go by right in 9 zoning districts with no community input and no council approval. When you do not know something about something, or when you do not have enough information, we put a pause. And that's what I'm asking. Let's put a pause till we learn more about the impact and till we develop protections in place for our communities.
At the beginning of this segment, you heard fellow council member Dante Anderson express a desire to have more information about these centers before any public hearings can be held. And yet, as you pointed out in another cut that I didn't play, we've been talking about this, on council have been talking about this for 2.5 years, and yet there's no decision, and you call that unacceptable. Have you been talking about it in a vacuum? Have you been talking about it without the information that you need to make decisions? What's that all about?
So, Mike, I need to make sure that I give credit to Councilmember Mayfield. She was the first one to sound an alarm on this issue. She raised concerns back in 2023 when we had a data center rezoning in front of us. She asked about the impact to our communities, followed by Councilmember Johnson, who has had several conversations with the subject matter experts on this specific topic, as well as our planning staff. So there have been conversations that's been taking place. So this is not something new. Cities across the nation and across the state have taken steps to protect their communities. And when you do not know something about it, all we are saying is that let public hearing take place while you are researching the issue. It's not either or. You can still learn more about it, and you can still allow public hearing. Public hearing allows us to hear from the community, and it is the first legal step that is needed to put a pause.
What would you expect to hear from the public in these open forums about these centers? And if, as council members, some on council feel they don't have enough information to hold the public hearings, why would you expect that what you're hearing from the public would be well informed?
Well, the public hearing is the first legal step for us to put a pause till we develop some guardrails around data centers. And when we talk about what we will hear from public, this gives an opportunity to hear from residents who are currently residing next to data centers. In fact, I want to share a story of our neighbor. It's a heartfelt story that we heard from a resident who is actually my neighbor named Gustavo, who lives in Far East near one of the proposed data centers in Far East. He's raising a child with autism, and he talked about the fear of constant 24/7 humming noise from cooling systems and backup generators. And as a parent, that stays with you because this conversation is no longer hypothetical. This is about children, this is about health, and this is about quality of life for our residents. We have residents worried about air quality, water usage, noise, and whether their neighborhood will change drastically forever. And these concerns deserve respect and not dismissal. And that's why I called for a public hearing. And that's the first step that we need, that is legally needed for us to put a pause till we develop regulations. Our planning staff has told us that it's going to take for them anywhere between 3 to 6 months to put regulations in place. So currently it's wild, wild west, because as I mentioned earlier, data centers can currently go by right in 9 zoning districts, including uptown core and mixed use communities. And that is a concern that I hear from our residents.
Okay, Zach, these are big boxes, not a lot of windows, not a lot of employees. Evidently, they do make noise, and there are water and electric power usage concerns that we will talk about as we go through this. But are they, as an environmental reporter, are they any more concerning to you than putting a big box store in, or putting a shopping center in, or an office park? Are they any worse?
That's a good question. I think the answer really depends on the type of data center, because in Charlotte, we already have several. I was able to verify at least 7 operating in Charlotte, but depending on what source you're looking at, there's one map that shows over 40 data centers in the Charlotte area. If it's a larger data center, like powering all of these servers, as Nick said, these are basically server farms. They can be in a warehouse. They can be in a kind of building you would see in a regular business park, looking fairly innocuous. But keeping them cool and utilizing those servers uses a lot of energy and water, which is what I, as an environmental reporter, I'm primarily looking at. In North Carolina, data from the Electric Power and Research Institute shows that data centers currently consume around 2.5 to 3% of the energy produced in North Carolina. That figure is expected to increase anywhere from up to about 4.5 to 9.5% in 2030. So we see the potential for that to double in the coming years.
To that point, during a recent earnings call, Duke Energy President Harry Sideris said that Duke has experienced 7.6 gigawatts of new demand from data centers across its multi-state territories. They serve more than just North Carolina, up 2.7 gigawatts since the end of last year, which is just over 4 months ago. Mm-hmm. Put 7.6 gigawatts into perspective. How much power is that?
That's what Duke Energy is looking at in their economic pipeline across all of its multi-state territories. So that's not just in the Carolinas, but 7.6 gigawatts spread across that multi-state region. That is a few power plants, a few gas power plants that could be the equivalent of, more than 7 nuclear reactors in order to power that energy demand that would come from that. So in North Carolina, we're not seeing all of that 7.6 gigawatts of data center growth in our economic pipeline, but data centers do make up the majority of what we're seeing in terms of projected demand for the state in the upcoming years.
Nick.
That's two points. One, just as a sense of scale, you can think of a gigawatt as like a small to medium sized city. So I think Fayetteville is about 500 megawatts, half a gigawatt. So just as a sense, it's a lot. And the other point I want to make is that we're getting at this kind of lack of transparency around data centers and the shifting sands of these kind of load forecasts. Because I want to add that Duke is required to file these updates on large load additions. It filed one on April 15th, that said it expects about 8 gigawatts of large load additions over the next 10 years.
This part of the country, I could be wrong about this. My impression is that this part of the country seems to be attractive to companies wanting to locate these data centers. What makes the Southeast and the Charlotte region, which includes Hickory and Catawba County and others, what makes it attractive?
Yeah, I would say that that comes down to, one, we already have a history with data centers. Data centers mm-hmm. tend to want to be near some of these other facilities for co-location reasons. And also we have the infrastructure. We also have a utility, Duke Energy, that's actively courting these projects. They want data centers to come here so that they can build out the infrastructure to support these projects. That's how Duke Energy earns its money. And they make this argument that having these data centers, having these more of these large load customers that are using all of these megawatt hours every year would spread out the cost of that utility infrastructure. And they argued that this would bring rates down for everybody, but that's if these projects materialize and the amount of demand that they forecast actually comes to the Carolinas.
Dimple.
So in addition to electricity, and it puts strain on our electricity grid, there is also a concern about tax credit and subsidies, right? This facility received tens of millions of dollars in tax incentives under old state law. And when you look at our local budget, some of our revenue comes from sales and use tax. Majority comes from the property tax, but also some of it comes from sales and use tax. So we are asking local residents to bear the burden on infrastructure, right? Utilities, quality of life. Governor Joe Stein and his team had published a number where they said that growing cost of this incentives is anywhere between $45 to $60 million a year. And as communities evaluate whether this public benefits truly outweigh the long-term impacts, and that's what we also need to consider locally as well as statewide.
Harry Sideris, who's the president of Duke Energy, also said that Duke Energy has been collaborating with local governments to attract data centers to its territories. Have they been in conversation, Dimple, with the city of Charlotte, with the Mecklenburg County, with other surrounding areas?
I'm not aware of any conversations. They haven't reached out to me, but that doesn't mean they haven't had any conversations with
and you, city staff. And you mentioned tax breaks. Governor Josh Stein wants to eliminate tax breaks for data centers.
Right.
Why are they available to them? These are not locations that employ or bring a lot of employment to an area. In fact, it's just a big building with a bunch of servers in it and maybe a couple of IT guys who come in to make sure the power's still on, as I understand it. So why would they get tax breaks?
That's correct. And that's a question that even I have, because ultimately we are subsidizing. They're getting city services, but they're being subsidized at the expense of our communities. And I agree with Governor Josh Stein. Why are they getting benefits? And I know this is an older state law, and I'm sure there will be some traction on this issue, because this is not a partisan issue. This issue is something that cuts across party lines. We have seen communities like Rowan County, Apex, even Durham. I mean, you can see a broad spectrum. Municipalities have taken a step to protect their communities by putting a pause on data centers, temporary pause.
Zach.
Yeah, I think the year was 2006 when that budget law was passed that eliminated the sales tax for data centers, so they're not paying that sales tax on their electricity. And this was a time when North Carolina, I believe, wanted to attract data centers to the state. We had towns like Lenoir that received Google. This is like, I think Lenoir and Forest City, these are some of the first sort of like East Coast ambassadors of some of these West Coast big tech companies. And they're very proud of being the landing site for some of these big name tech companies.
And Nick, when you were on the program in October, we had somebody on from that area who was very excited about the location of these data centers and what they anticipated they would do for the local economy. Apple, Google, Facebook, Microsoft were among the companies at the time seeking approval to locate in this region and in Catawba County. Some of them have put those plans on hold, but some regions seem to be really friendly, welcoming these facilities, while others, like Charlotte, are going, whoa, let's take a break. Let's take a break. Why?
For those localities, I think it has to do with property taxes. I think when you see an entity, you know, valued so highly, or a facility valued so highly, it's going to redound to the property tax base, even if it doesn't bring terribly many jobs, some of them more than others. And if they're, you know, if they're kind of designed carefully and out of the way, they can be pretty innocuous. I don't think that's necessarily what we're seeing now. That's not why, that's why people are concerned, because there's this kind of flood driven by AI again, and by a lot of that, all of that hype is driving a lot of third-party data center developers. So you listed a bunch of kind of name brand companies that would be the end users of data centers. Right now, they're the vast majority in North Carolina are proposed and developed by third parties that are kind of developing, they call it like a powered box. We're going to get the box, we're going to get power to it, you put the servers in it, then we're going to flip it to you and make a bunch of money. And there's almost like a land speculation feel to it. That's not necessarily a recipe for the innocuous data center that's going to to support tax base.
We keep hearing about property taxes that these facilities will pay to cities and counties, et cetera. And we're in a situation, Dimple, right now, where both, I think, the city and the county are contemplating raising property taxes. And we've had this flight from commercial property, a lot of vacancies, which has put the burden of property taxes on residential property taxpayers and not commercial taxpayers. Why wouldn't we welcome with open arms these data centers that will increase our property tax base and maybe take some of the pressure off residents?
Well, Mike, it's not that simple, because our local revenue comes from property tax as well as sales and use tax. As Zach mentioned earlier, that some of these facilities under the state, under the old state law, they are getting subsidies, which means lower revenue for us too. So families are being asked to pay more, higher property taxes are being proposed, and a 1 cent sales tax increase takes effect in July, while residents are being asked to subsidize these enormous facilities that receive major tax incentives and place huge demands on our infrastructure. We need to ask why. Because yes, we might get higher property tax revenue, but then we are also subsidizing them on a sales tax and use tax, which we also get from the state. So I think the question is about fairness. Are they really paying their fair share? And that should be part of the conversation when we put a pause, and that should be part of the question. The growth should pay its own way.
The other part of the conversation is their impact or potential impact on the environment, and we will talk about those concerns in just a moment when we come back in Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about data centers and the concerns surrounding the pluses, surrounding them, the pluses and minuses, with Zachary Turner, our climate reporter here at WFAE News. Dimple Ejmera is an at-large member of Charlotte City Council who has called for a moratorium while we process some information about these data centers. And Nick Jimenez is with us. He's a senior attorney with the Southern Environmental Law Center. Nick, one of the big concerns about that has been swirling around these data centers is that they ultimately increase the power bills for residential customers. From what other people around the country where these places have proliferated, how much of an increase do these the presence of these centers result in usually?
It's a great question, but it's a hard one to answer, because the boom that we're seeing in data centers right now is new, and it takes time for the costs that they're going to cause the system and the utility to incur to get rolled into rates and for everyone to see that. So you're seeing a little of it in Virginia, where we've had the largest data center cluster in the world for some years. I couldn't give you a percent from Virginia. The increase in bills that we've seen recently is actually from the cost of methane gas to fuel power plants. There was a recent report from Lawrence Berkeley Lab, far and away number one cause. And a lot of the number two cause that we've been seeing in the state is the distribution grid, kind of keeping those poles and wires up and hardening them against storms, against disasters that, ironically enough, are often climate driven.
We've been hearing for years now about how antiquated America's electrical grid is and how vulnerable it is. Can the grid, as it stands, handle the influx of these power-hungry data centers without a major upgrade, without adding additional power generation capacity? And what kind of upgrades to the grid and to local power delivery systems are needed? You want to chime in on that, Zach?
I
Did you
was going
put
to
your
chime
hand up?
in. I was thinking about,
Sure.
I mean, from the local side of things, you need to add new distribution lines, or I guess in this case, transmission lines and substations. These are some of the localized costs that, in general, data centers are paying for in an agreement that they have with utilities. But talking about the energy generation resources, I think that's the bigger question about whether or not the grid, as it stands with all of the natural gas, the coal, the solar, the nuclear reactors that we have on the grid right now. There are some studies that say that we could handle significant data center growth with the current grid that we have, as long as these facilities are able to curtail or use energy during a few key hours out of the year. And these are some provisions that Duke Energy has looked at and is implemented more recently into contracts that they're making with new data centers. But whether or not that's been implemented or reflected in their load forecast, because that would have a significant impact on the amount of projected demand during some of those key hours in the year, remains to be seen. And I think Nick would probably have a more updated look at that.
Nick?
I'm so glad you brought up the data center flexibility point, Zach. So, under business as usual, yes, we would build a lot of stuff to serve them. You put a gigawatt data center somewhere, as Zach said, you're going to need to build transmission and distribution infrastructure, maybe just transmission to serve it. And for all of that load, when they say they need to be up 99.999% of the time, the default would be to build a new power plant to serve them. And we're seeing kind of a one-to-one correlation in Duke's long-term resource plan, where it's proposing to build a lot of gas plants. So that's kind of what would happen under business as usual. I know, as Zach mentioned, Duke has included some curtailment provisions in its contracts. We think you really need a tariff that applies to all of these. And I can tell you more about what that is, but it's a special rate that essentially says these kind of customers are liable to cause certain costs for the system, and we need to make sure they pay them. And we need to make sure that they stay around and pay them. So there's collateral, there are
Yeah.
exit fees, there are a lot of protections for the rest of us.
I want to come back to that in a second, but Nick, since we do have an antiquated, allegedly antiquated power grid and we need upgrades on it, could this be the silver lining? If these companies come in demanding more power, it's requiring us to upgrade the grid, upgrade power generation. That's question number one. Could that be the silver lining? And question number two is in places where the grid has had to be improved because of these power hungry data centers, are power companies generally simply building more fossil fuel fired power plants, or are they turning to cleaner forms of power generation?
I think they could be a silver bullet in theory. If we do it very carefully, they could. I was struck, as you probably know, the Utilities Commission held a technical conference on these large load additions last fall, and a representative from the Data Center Coalition said, I'm barely paraphrasing here, lean on us to modernize the grid. Let's do that. They have oceans of money. They ought to be able to pay their way. But yes, I mean that build out in methane gas that I described for Duke is happening nationwide.
Okay.
And it's, when you have a load that says it needs that incredibly high uptime, the kind of traditional thinking of what's going to serve that on a one-to-one basis is that gas plant that you can just flip on, even though they have outages and there are problems with doing that. I think we need to move to a broader picture of the grid that includes flexibility from the data center side and an integration of more resources across a broader area.
Zach.
I think what's interesting about that opportunity there, this opportunity for data centers to come and to help modernize the grid and influence the direction in which we go with how we're getting our power, whether that's coming from fossil fuels like natural gas or coal, or whether we're getting it from projects like offshore wind. The two ways that that could happen, one is through the Utility Commission instituting something like a clean energy tariff, and having something that's more institutionalized like that. But we've also seen in communities like Lancaster, Pennsylvania, I'm drawing a little bit from Katie Meyer's reporting at Blue Ridge Public Radio, where the community there signed a community benefits agreement with the data center that was coming to town. And that community benefits agreement had provisions about that data center drawing energy from clean sources. So there is an opportunity for host communities to reach an agreement with data centers through these community benefit agreements to secure provisions like getting energy from clean sources. But that requires time and that requires education of those communities, which is why a lot of communities are turning to moratoriums right now so that they have that time to consider. How do we maximize the benefits of a data center while minimizing the costs?
Dimple, you have been nodding vigorously during Zach's comments. Go ahead.
Yes, because Zach nailed it. We have heard from various organizations, including SCLC, Action NC, Clean Air Carolinas. They have given us some ideas and innovative tools that we can use to put regulations and guardrails in place. And one example I can tell you where require data centers to generate the energy from renewable source, ask them to have solar panels. So there are avenues that there are innovative solutions out there. But then Action NC has also raised concerns around environment justice issue. Because what's happening right now, Mike, is we are seeing more and more of these facilities being proposed in the Crescent, historically underserved communities. And they are becoming sacrifice zones for unchecked expansion. And that's what we need to do is to put a pause so there is no unchecked industrial expansion at the expense of underserved communities, especially the Crescent. We know that these facilities are being proposed in the Crescent. That's where minority communities live, and that raises serious environment justice as well as equity concerns.
Zach, as you reported just this week, Duke Energy earned $1.58 billion in profits in the first quarter of this year. That's up $180 million from this time last year. Yet they've already asked for a rate hike to cover the higher fuel costs they incurred to generate power last fall. And when these data centers come online, rates tend to go up again. And that is because of the need to generate more power and to upgrade the grid, as we've been talking about. These centers are being built by some of the richest, largest technology companies in the world. Why are we paying for this? They could pay for this with pocket change.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the question. That's the conversation that we're having right now in the Utility Commission. That's what a lot of these questions surrounding community benefits agreements or power purchase agreements are centered on. But as of right now, we haven't started to really see these costs that we're seeing with the fuel costs adjustments and next year's potential rate hike. This is before any of these AI data centers have come to North Carolina. These are the costs that we're already seeing from existing upgrades to our infrastructure. We haven't yet even seen the cost of the proposed infrastructure plans that, Duke has put forth with the Utility Commission this year.
Nick, another concern we hear a lot about when we talk about these data centers is how much water they consume for cooling. The U.S. data centers consumed over 17 billion gallons of water in 2023. That number has assuredly increased since 2023 and was projected at the time to double by 2028. Why Is water needed to cool these places in a world of air conditioning? And why aren't they operating on a closed loop system where the same water simply gets circulated around over and over and over again? Why do they have to take water out of lakes, rivers, and streams and then dump it back in at a higher temperature? Why?
Short answer is that the chips that they're using, at least for these AI data centers, get very hot when they're doing their work. And you've got to cool them somehow. Just blowing air past them, unless you're in like Norway, is not going to do it. So the cheapest and, in a sense, one of the most efficient cooling methods is to run water past them and then let it evaporate when it's hot. And when it evaporates, you're not putting it back into the river. You can do closed loop like you just described. That's one of the cooling methods. And I know Zach has covered this in some detail, but it costs more to build. Costs more to build it that way.
Dimple, they've been taking water out. The typical data center uses about 300,000 gallons of water a day. That's enough to serve 1,000 homes. What has Charlotte Water, we're in a drought, what has Charlotte Water had to say about these data centers and their demand for water?
Yes, I have had several conversations with the head of Charlotte Water, Angela Charles, and she walked me through how there are facilities that have closed loop systems and there are other facilities that they are negotiating with. But again, we don't have a framework, and that's what we need a pause for to develop this framework, because currently we are in stage two drought, the first time in 17 years where we are asking residents to conserve water. So it's reasonable to ask whether this massive facilities should face the stronger review too. And that would be part of the pause. So when we put a pause, we need, at the same time, we need to work on accomplishing all of these items and answering questions around water, electricity, quality of life, noise, all of those questions, because this is an emerging use. There is not a lot of information out there. We do not know about the impact, whether these facilities generate PFAS, all of these questions. There are so many questions, but until we put a pause, they are allowed by right. So once they are allowed and approved by right and built, there is no undo button. And that's what keeps me up at night. This pause is about doing our homework before the scale of development outpaces our regulations and guardrails.
So I have just a couple of minutes left, Nick, and we've talked about noise pollution, that these centers have a hum about them that causes problems. We have not talked about air pollution. There's concern about air pollution from these centers. Not because these computers generate bad air, but because occasionally they have to be online 24/7, and if the power goes out, they have diesel generators as backup, and they pollute the atmosphere. How big a concern are either of those? Can the noise be mitigated? And do diesel backup generators that run 0.1% of the time, really, is that really a concern?
Noise can be mitigated. The best way to mitigate it that I'm aware of is to run a different type of cooling system. So the thing that the noise comes from is I think you alluded to, is the fans that run the cooling system. Mm-hmm. If you different types of cooling systems don't use those fans. I can't get into the technical details of that, but I know they're purported to be a whole lot quieter. In terms of the backup generation, yes, they many of them say they need near complete uptime. Whether that's true for all of them is an open question. Google has signed agreements to have flexible data centers. But assuming that's true, they say, yeah, if the grid goes down, we need to be able to flip a switch and have generation. And a lot of them, what that means for them is fleets of diesel generators. I'm aware of one data center that's being worked on in North Carolina that has 500 some diesel generators. Those can be, you know, cleaned up some, but there's really no way to run those that's not going to impact local air.
We've spoken about a lot of the concerns surrounding these, Dimple. Do you see any positives from these data centers? And I only have a minute left.
I don't, but at the same time, I want to say that we can embrace innovation while still protecting neighborhoods. This is not about us trying to stop progress. It's just about getting it right.
And if you're successful in getting the moratorium or the pause that you want, how long would that pause be? And what do you see as the accomplishment? Because the pause would have to be, you'd have to come up with regulations at the end of it,
right?
That's
right. So the pause is to give us time so that we can do our homework, answer all the questions, and come up with framework and regulations to protect our communities. And the 90-day pause will give our planning staff to come back into council and say, here are the regulations we propose.
And will the city be able to do their own regulations, or will you be likely overruled by the legislature?
No, this is something that city can do.
Okay.
Like other municipalities have done in the state.
Dimple Ashmera is an at-large member of Charlotte City Council who has called for a 90-day pause on any future data centers until they can figure things out. Nick Jimenez joined us. He's senior attorney with the Southern Environmental Law Center. And Zachary Turner is our climate reporter here at WFAE News. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. The producer is Chris Jones. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.